Welcome to Positive Impact with Andrew Schultz.
Do you want more self-love? Do you want more confidence? Are you struggling with stress and anxiety? Do you want more clarity of purpose? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I want to talk to you. My name is Andrew Schultz. I'm a transformational life coach. And over the past 5 years, I've helped hundreds of clients from all walks of life create maximum success, significance, and fulfillment. By uncovering your limiting beliefs, blind spots, fears, and resentments, discovering the negative consequences they are having in your life and in the lives of those around you, and discarding those old ways of being to create new habits, rituals, goals, and ways of being that are in alignment with your highest good and the best version of yourself. Through my 90-day Positive Impact Transformational Coaching Program. Together, one day at a time, because it's my life's purpose to empower you, support you, and be of service to you. You were meant to thrive, not just survive. I'm calling you forward because I believe in you. Calling you towards your greatness. If this is you and you're ready, click on the link in the show notes or go to my Instagram, Positive Impact Andrew, and send me a message to schedule a free 30-minute connection call today. And together, locking arms together to create a life of maximum success and significance and fulfillment. Hey friends, welcome back to Positive Impact. It is June, which means it's Men's Health Awareness Month, and I have a guest on today, and he is going to drop bombs of knowledge and wisdom all about biohacking to help us live longer, healthier, and more fulfilling lives. My guest, Phil Lavasseur, aka Biohacking Bend. Phil, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew, for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, Phil. So to start out, I like to ask this same question to guests. What is a transformational experience in your life that catapulted you onto the journey that you're living today?
Gosh, if I'd have to go back, I think it probably comes right back to actually finding CrossFit and getting involved in that community and seeing how awesome it was to just have so many people wanting to get better with their health. And it just goes so much further than that. So the point where I am today, but that was over a decade ago. And yeah, it was so empowering just to see so many people taking their health into their own hands and, you know, knowing that they're doing something good for themselves and knowing that it's hard and we can do hard things together. And that's kind of what really led me to optimizing myself and eventually trying to share that with everybody.
So for people listening, I moved up to Bend December 2022, and over the last 6 months, I've built a friendship with Phil, and he leads a group called Biohacking Bend. And so that's how Phil got on my radar, and we started connecting. And so this Biohacking Bend group that Phil leads, it's a very special, you know, it's all about community for me. Community is a core value of mine. And every community I've lived in, Phil, I've been very immersed in the community. And first off, I just want to acknowledge you for being a leader in our community of Bend, Oregon, and acknowledge you for all that you're doing, the support, the empowerment, being of service to so many people, not just only in our community, but outside our community as well. And I just want to acknowledge you first and foremost for all that you're doing.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that.
So what the hell is biohacking?
I mean, the term is, it's quite broad, right? Like I think at the foundational level, we're all biohackers. Like every single person is a biohacker. If you drink coffee, you're doing it to probably just alter the way you feel. That's biohacking. If you you do anything health related, you're biohacking. I think the first biohackers were people that, you know, were just into bodybuilding, weightlifting, and, you know, like just you're trying to change your body for the better. And that's biohacking at its root cause. You're just trying to alter yourself to be better or change your state of being. So it can be an external stimulus. It can be internal by taking supplements, anything like that. You're just trying to optimize yourself and change your current state of being. So yeah, it's really biohacking in a nutshell, I think.
So my intention for having you on today is, you know, not just men, but specifically men, because it's Men's Health Awareness Month. My intention is to empower men and women listening with tools and practical information to help them live longer and healthier and more fulfilling lives. And I think you're the perfect person to have on because you have so much wisdom and knowledge. And so let's break it down. Like, let's break it down to a few key areas for people listening that they can focus on and implement to create a positive impact in their life going forward. So if we were to break it down into the top three areas, where should we start for people listening?
Man, yeah, it's a hard question to kind of dumb down to like three areas, but if you're just trying to optimize your well-being, like a couple things have to, I think, be foundational. You can say food, nutrition is like one of the base of the pyramids to really feel amazing. And that's a really tough question to answer. What's good for you or anyone. Mm-hmm. And then you just go down like all the way to the roots of like what biohacking is kind of all about. And if you go down to like the mitochondrial level, like what is it that makes our cells actually like contain energy and provide us with energy so that all functions of our body work. And if I'm getting your question right, this leads me to say a couple things. You've got to get your lighting environment right. So nutrition is a big one. Sleep, and I would say water. Like it's some of the biggest things that we take for granted because they're simple things, just consuming water, just going to bed at the same time every night. But there's actually a lot of things we can do to optimize each one of those areas. So I would say those would be the focus.
All right, let's start nutrition.
Okay. That's the big rabbit hole. And I'll always have to foreshadow this and just kind of say, I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not a medical professional, but that's also to my benefit is because I can share with people things that, you know, your medical doctor's not going to tell you because there's no 20-year double blind placebo study on eating this way that they're going to recommend you. They're going to tell you what has been said for the last 30 plus years, which is here's the FDA regulations, like the food pyramid. This is what we kind of know to eat off of. Maybe some doctors stray away from it slightly, but they also don't have education in nutrition either. So, you know, you're not going to get the right answer from them. And at the end of the day, you kind of have to be your own best doctor and just do a little research on your own. So with nutrition, I think the biggest thing is we all fall into eating the American standard diet, or I think SAD, the standard American diet, is kind of like what it's referred to as. The SAD diet is really what makes us sick. So if you can get away from that, and it's really highly processed foods.
Like, hang on real quick. I've never heard that. The acronym SAD. I just put that together. Yeah. So I want to make sure, because I'm a little slow. So SAD, the acronym, Standard American Diet.
Yes.
Yeah. I've never heard that before. Mic drop. If people listening, if that's all you hear today, there's value.
Yeah. I mean, Mark Hyman, these guys, they're talking about this all the time. And, you know, those are some key influencers that have really pushed me forward in all health and wellness things. And yeah, it's just know that that's the standard American diet is not good. So we got to get away from it. Processed foods, you know, and if you talk about where you go, like if you're shopping in the grocery store, just shop the perimeter for the most part, and you're probably going to feel a lot better. And but the perimeter too, you're going to find your packaged foods and frozen sections and stuff like that in certain grocery stores. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I would tell people to also eat what makes them feel good, because we also know like you can't do like a blanket statement and say like everybody should eat broccoli, because if I eat broccoli, maybe I actually have an adverse reaction to it. Maybe I can't digest that food, so I get inflammation from broccoli. Like I always just caution people, like, I'm never going to tell you what you should eat, but it's pretty clear, at least in terms of research and like how we've become as a civilization, like, you know, eat some animal-based foods. You can probably mix in some vegetables and some greens here and there, because seasonally those things do grow too. So depending on where you are, always try to eat, you know, seasonally. You're going to feel a lot better, especially if the food's not traveling out of state, miles away, out of country to get to your table. Like once a fruit's picked from a tree, right? Like it starts losing its nutrients. Like the longer it takes to get to your table, the less nutrient dense food you eat. And that's why the big problem is we're not eating nutrient dense foods anymore. So, I mean, we can go down the rabbit hole of like organ meats and all that stuff too, but like, honestly, not a lot of people are not going to touch organ meats. You know, I've tried them too. They're not the best tasting. You can develop a palate for it. Fortunately, there are some supplements out there that can get you those organs in a desiccated form, which is probably the best and easiest way to do it for most of us that have just busy lifestyles.
So, and I think also supporting local is really important from a sustainability standpoint, because if you think about, if you just talk about produce, if you eat produce that's picked in a different country, say in the wintertime, the amount of labor, fuel, logistics, like that goes into getting that produce from say Mexico in the wintertime. And if we're living in Oregon, it's not very sustainable. So just being more mindful in our consumption from a sustainability standpoint and a health and wellness standpoint is really important as well.
Oh, for sure. Support local all the way. And that's kind of what we love about Ben too, is there's a big support local. Like you see the stickers in different like coffee shops and stuff around here too. So, you know, supporting local is, I think, the only way of the future. The more we ship things in from far away, it's only going to last so long. And then the price just goes up on everything and people complain, but it's, yeah, just support your local farmer, go to the farmer's markets.
Yep.
It might be a little more expensive, but you're also going to get a lot more nutrient dense food. And that's actually the big argument for like, why should I shop organic? It's like twice expensive in some cases for certain things. But like the reality of that statement is it's actually cheaper in the long run because you pay for it in your health. And we
absolutely
know this, right? Like the body is so resilient. You can feed yourself garbage food for 20, 30 years, but the disease doesn't present itself until you're in your like 50s. And we know how reversible that is. Diet can change things in days, but if you start now, man, you can really stave off all those, that disease and anything negative for a very long time. But yeah, it might be a little more expensive right now, but you're not going to pay for it later. So.
And I think the supporting local, the farmers and the wholesalers and the distributors, you know, the ma and pa's, the family owned businesses, I feel that's a sustainable model as well. So when you think about sustainability, it's about empowering people to have a sustainable business model by supporting their, you know, if it's a local produce or a local meats. And I think it goes a long way because people think about sustainability where it's like fuel and logistics and clean air, but it's also about empowering others to build a sustainable business model by supporting local as well. So for people listening, summertime is a great opportunity for all of us to support local.
Agreed. Yep.
All right. So next, let's talk about water.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, that's one of my favorite topics. And I don't know everything by a long shot, but it's really like, and the knowledge that's up in my head really just comes from like years and years of just listening to other health influencers that bring on, you know, these leading experts in the field of water, electricity, EMF, all that stuff. So it's, water is just fascinating. Like it's so remarkable that we still don't know a lot about it. But like 5-6 years ago, if you asked me anything about water, I'm like, it's just water. Like, okay, maybe I'll filter it a little bit. Man, it's just, that's like oversimplifying water by a long shot. Like, I mean, it holds energy, it has frequency. Like there's just so much to it that, you know, we need to understand and figure out how to make it more accessible to people. Granted, if we were drinking spring water that we'd found in nature, like, you know, our ancestors, we could probably stave off a lot of disease and problems that we see today. So water filtration is big. At the very bare minimum, like nobody should probably be drinking tap water. And if you just look at EWG, they've got a great website. You can just type in your zip code and just find the municipal water supply in your area. And they've got tests. Sometimes they might be like a year old test, but there's no standard of improvement for these municipalities because the amount of filtration they would have to do to actually get rid of the levels of contaminant that well, one, the FDA has regulated as like safe levels, which, I mean, if you think there's safe levels of things like arsenic and stuff like that, that's just wild. It's, they're only put in place so that these municipalities can actually still give us water at our tap, because they can't filter out anymore. It's just too expensive. So you've got to filter your own drinking water for sure. And then you can take it a step further from there. Can you filter your whole house? Like if you can get whole home filtration, that's going to be awesome, because what you shower and what you brush your teeth with, I mean, your skin's the biggest organ on your body. So anything you're putting on your skin, you're absorbing. And what they found in water today is pharmaceuticals, all the chemicals and pesticides that are sprayed on crops runs off into the water table. And in some cases, people are like, I'm on well water and it's great. Well, when was the last time you tested your well water? Because that all the seepage from all the chemicals spills and everything just goes down into that water table, and it's going to get into those well water too. So you've got to filter. You just have to.
Okay. Is there a water filtration system that you recommend? Because I'm going to put all the things in the show notes if you have recommendations for people listening.
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely some good ones out there. The most popular ones you're probably hearing about, if you're listening to like any health influencers, is going to be your AquaTrue. It's just they have a couple of versions. It's a reverse osmosis. They've patented a couple of ways to make it a little bit better, but they've got an uncounter version and then an under-counter version. But like reverse osmosis is something that in some cases you could do for your whole home. It's really expensive. I don't think many people do that. But that would be your drinking water, and that's going to strip everything out of the water, which leads to another problem, is now you've got all the minerals out of it, which if you're drinking spring water, you're going to get your minerals. So you've got to add them back in. And there's other ways to do that. I'm all about budget biohacking, because I don't have a huge budget for all these things I love to do. I just take a little glass jar, put 5 ounces of water, 3 heaping tablespoons of Celtic sea salt, which has different levels of all 78 trace minerals. Let it sit for 24 hours. Do 1 teaspoon in the morning with a big glass of water from that filtered water. And now you've got a pretty good amount of your minerals in with a glass of water. So that's key. Filter it, but then remineralize. That's the only way we actually stay hydrated.
Budget biohacking. I love it. That's even better.
Yeah. I got a budget.
Okay.
Biohack on a budget is what I say, just because, you know, you can follow some of these big health influencers and try to buy all their fancy products, and you know, you're going to zero out your bank account real quick.
Yeah. What about hydration? Speaking of water, it seems a lot of my coaching clients that I work with, I think 95%, I would say, Phil, are not getting enough water. They're not drinking enough water. They're dehydrated. Can you talk about that and the impact it has on our body if we are dehydrated?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to speak to like all the biomechanical things that will change if you're dehydrated, but we know there's complications of dehydration that, you know, if water makes up, I don't even remember the exact percentage, like 80 to 90% of like what's in us, we have to have water, right? Furthermore, when you talk about the water that's like in our cells of our body, they know now that what they're seeing is that's actually structured water. And that's like a deeper level of like quality of water. And this is how we actually can help stay hydrated. One is the minerals. So I think a misconception that a lot of people have is if I drink more water, what's the average recommendation? Like 8 cups of water a day or something. That's how you kind of stay hydrated.
Yeah. I think it's taking your body weight, divide it by 2 and drinking that many ounces of water.
Right. And it's actually a lot of water. The problem there is if you drink all that water and it is filtered, you're for sure not getting any minerals, and you're not getting the right amount of minerals, even if it's just tap water. So what you actually end up doing is further dehydrating yourself, because if you don't have the minerals to hold on to the water, you're just going to pee it out. So you're just really going to go to the bathroom a lot more. And people have probably experienced this. I know I have, especially doing CrossFit growing up and playing sports. You're told to drink more water, like before an event, a couple of days before, you start hydrating a lot more. And man, you end up going to the bathroom a lot. But what I've actually noticed now is, you know, there's a lot of science around this too, is if you get the right levels of minerals in your water, you don't have to drink as much. But the biggest indicator of like, do you actually need to drink more is, do you feel thirsty? Like taking like an actual recommendation of so many cups of water based on your weight is maybe a good place to start. But then it comes back to like, if you're thirsty, you probably need a drink of water. And there's some experts out there now who are talking about like, you know, a cup or two of water a day is all they need to feel fully hydrated. And when we come back to structured water, right? Like I filter my water and then we have like a water structuring device. And structuring water is really just bringing it back to its natural state. You pull more oxygen in by spiralizing it or vortexing it in different devices. They do it different ways. But that's what's happening in nature, like water flowing up, being pushed up through the ground, through rocks. It's being forced through things. You're pulling more oxygen in, and there's off-gassing also happening, which is, you know, the science is showing you're potentially off-gassing a lot of those chemicals too. So just vortexing and structuring your water, bringing that energy back in, it could be like, you know, passing it through crystals or literally just putting like different crystals around your water can energize the water again. And if you
drink, I love that. Yeah. I love that.
You drink that, you're holding on to that energy. So your body has to do less work to restructure it to begin with. And there's studies on it too, that shows like just the absorption rate of structured water is actually promising too. We drink it in its natural state. Our body has to do less work to absorb it.
Mm, beautiful, man. I love it. All right. So people listening, I recommend going back and listening to this a few times, and I'm going to make sure we put all of the notes that Phil recommends, the referrals, like the EWG, the municipal water test. That's a great resource for people. Like I never knew that. And so I'm going to put that in the show notes, the AquaTrue reverse osmosis. I'm going to put that in the show notes. So for people listening, we're empowering them with information and knowledge that they can take and improve their life. And that's what I really want people to take away from this. It can be very overwhelming, but we're going to put in the show notes really easy, practical things that we can do to empower everybody to live a longer, healthier, happier, more fulfilling life, because we were not meant to survive. We were meant to thrive in all areas of our life. And that's why having Phil on is so important, because so many of us, and I see this with my coaching clients, people in the community, society as a whole, that people are just, they're comfortable. They are not average, and they're accepting mediocrity as the norm.
Exactly.
And it's not the norm. We were all meant to thrive, not be average. We were not meant to be mediocre. And everything that Phil's sharing with us are easy ways to improve our life so we feel better. So we show up better for ourselves, our friends, our family, and our community.
Yeah, yeah, that's it.
Okay. Let's go to sleep next.
All right. Sleep's a big one. I think we underestimate the power of sleep. I love the Oura Ring. That's one of the things that I wear to track my sleep with. It's just one of those sleep trackers that are out there. You know, you've got your Whoop. There's a couple other brands. Man, the sleep rabbit hole. I guess for one, you've got to just sleep comfortably, right? Comfortably for me is I definitely want to be cool. I sleep hot. So like, you know, even in the wintertime, the AC is coming on, especially we have a unique place here in Bend, right? Like sometimes in the winter, we've got neighbors that have wood burning stoves. So you can't just open your window because then you smell smoke coming in overnight. We've tried that. So, you know, we run the AC even in the winter, but just to drop the temp a little bit in the room, that's going to be one of the first things that's going to help you sleep like way better. If you're hot, it's going to kick you out of your deep sleep, you know, REM. You're just not going to sleep as efficiently as you could. And I think that's where a lot of people don't know that they're not sleeping good, because they're like, oh, I slept 8 or 9 hours. Yeah, but what was that quality of sleep? You know, there's also studies that show if you sleep more than 9 hours per night, you're actually not going to live as long as somebody that sleeps on average 7.5 hours a night. So like we can oversleep too. There's parts of our body that like are designed to be awake and alert, have cortisol. But then there is that rest and digest state of sleep that there's optimal times. And I think we're so bio-individual that time probably is different for everybody. Maybe 8 hours of sleep is what you need, Andrew, every single night. For me, I'm over here feeling good on 6.5 hours or less a night. If I get more than that, it's pretty rare. But I also I engineer my environment. You know, I'm biohacking as much as I can to make sure that when I get to sleep, that's the best 6.5 hours of sleep I've ever had. Like I get 1.5 to 2 hours of REM every night. I get 2 hours of deep sleep every night. Things impact that big time though. Like if I'm hot, I see those numbers plummet. We also use in the house here, we have a Uller, which is another device made by ChiliPad. They basically use these devices on the side of your bed. You fill them up with water and it pumps cold water through a thin layer of that sits just above your mattress. And the great thing about that is water versus air, water pulls heat from the body really quick. We know that from cold plunging and all the great science around that, right? So if you're just laying against this mat that has cold water in it, it's going to strip that heat away from you quite a bit easier, and it'll drop your body temp overnight. And you can see it with like things like the Oura Ring, you see your body temp drop, and there's a direct correlation, at least from the data like that I see and most people will see, is as my temperature drops, like I get into a deeper state of sleep for longer. I haven't noticed it affect my REM sleep, but for sure deep sleep. So the cooler I am, the better.
Phil, quick question. Yeah. So let's focus in on REM sleep and deep sleep. And this is, I don't know this answer. What's ideal? So if I get an Oura Ring, or somebody wants to invest in an Oura Ring, they're reading the data. What's the data? What do they want to look for?
So there's a lot of science around it, and I don't know the exact number. Somebody'd have to fact check this, but like the Sleep Institute, I think the Salk Institute is in San Diego too. Like they've got a lot of good data on what's like the recommended amount of deep sleep and REM that somebody should get. Now, this is where I think one number probably doesn't make sense. I think we're so bio-individual that we're going to have different timings that work for us. So if you hear you've got to get 2 hours every night of REM and you are looking at your data every night and you're now stressing out about it because you're not getting 2 hours of sleep, that's probably going to affect your sleep more than just sleeping. Just forget about
good point. Data.
Just sleep, yep. Right?
Great advice.
Yeah. So these devices are great to a degree, right? Like,
yeah,
I think I've chatted with you about this. Like, it's all about getting more intuitive with our body. Like, these things are awesome. Use it and then try to guess before you look at the morning, like what your scores are. Like, try to guess, like, based on how you feel, like what my sleep number might be. And then eventually, you don't need the ring. You don't need these devices, but we're so far away from being intuitive with our bodies. And that's why some of these technologies are great, is can kind of tap back into that. So, yeah.
Well, that was one of my questions was going to be, how do you balance? How do you find balance with all the data? We're a data-driven technology. We have so much information at our fingertips, and finding that balance and being able to let go and be more intuitive. That's
hard. I think in the beginning, I was actually pretty neurotic about it too. I was always trying to measure everything I can. Like, and I'm a computer science major, like data is a big thing for me. So I'm like, oh, the more quantitative I can get, the better. And I've really got to strive to hit these numbers and do this. And that's also why I love CrossFit. It's like it's all quantitative. Like you can see your performance and how you got better based on times and the amount of weight you lift and all those things. So I'm a big data guy, but to not let that completely drive your obsession is very hard. So, you know, I've lost my Oura Ring at one point, and it was almost like a blessing. I lost it on a farm here, actually. We were processing turkeys, and I took it off. And I lost it on a farm, and it was gone for like 3 months. But then all of a sudden, they found it on the farm. They're like, I asked them if they ever found it. 3 months later, they found my Oura Ring, and I was like, okay, well. You know, it was cool that I didn't have it for a while, because I just started to try to tap in and build that intuition back in. Like, you know what? I had a good night's sleep, because there's sometimes for sure the ring, my numbers look great, and I'm like, man, I feel a little tired. So we got to take these things with a grain of salt. But I think if you know that before you buy something, that it's not the end all be all truth, it's easier to process. Otherwise, yeah, you're going to get down that rabbit hole of I have to put it on every single day. I can never take it off. And that's a problem. Like it's a whole nother level of like these biohacking tools getting in the way, I think.
Got it. I'm going to pivot real quick. I'm thinking of men. I'm thinking of men and women listening. And the majority of my audience is age 35 to 55. The majority of my audience is actually women. It's 70% women, 30% men. And so for people that who are listening, mindful movement, moving their body when it comes to their health, like what's the right workout? And I know you and I have talked in the biohacking, we have our own group chat, and we share a lot of information, and Phil enlightens us and drops bombs of wisdom and knowledge. And one of the things that Phil's helped me with is I've been running sprints lately. And so I'm 44. Running is not something I love to do, but I love to get my heart rate up. And I want to work my fast twitch muscles. And so I think this is relevant for everybody. First and foremost, my question is, why is running sprints so beneficial for me right now, Phil?
Well, for one, you're expressing your true like physiology, your biology. We were meant and designed to sprint. So I think from a very like fundamental level of like being a human being, like the sedentary lifestyle that we actually live as like Americans, like we can see the detrimental effect it has on us. So like just being more active and getting out and sprinting. Now, not that everybody should just go sprint tomorrow. Like if you're not doing that regularly, that's where we can start to see tissue injuries and sprains and stuff like that. So be smart about it. But whether you're going out to sprint like you are, which is great. I know there's a group here we've started too that wants to get out and sprint. I would definitely recommend just from like a longevity science around it. And I think Joel Green, he's one of the great guys that's got the book, The Immunity Code. He talks about like sprinting once a week, and he's got like a really cool workout regimen that it's really based on longevity. So like if we actually just express what our body is meant to do, one, you're going to spike the heart rate, right? We know getting your heart rate up is key to longevity. Heart health is big. So you've got to express your cardiovascular system, get that blood flowing, you know, get that heart rate up, and then come back down. So if we just do that occasionally throughout the week, we're going to live quite a bit healthier lifestyle than just not doing it at all. So whether you get the ability to go outside, do it on a treadmill, in CrossFit, high intensity exercise kind of touches on that, but like the physical sprint aspect of it, I think is missing a lot. Like if people were to just get out, it doesn't have to be on a track, it can be on dirt, it can be on pavement. Running is not the best. We weren't designed to be on pavement, and shoes is a whole nother topic.
Yeah.
I'm a Midwest guy, but, sprint where you can, when you can safely. So yeah.
All right. So I'm doing 12 sprints, and I usually run about 100 yards, and I rest for 3 minutes in between each sprint. Okay. And I think you mentioned something about testosterone for when we do sprints, and I thought you mentioned there was an element of our testosterone. I think, is that correct?
Yeah. So I can't speak to it eloquently enough, but there is science out there on just giving you a huge HGH boost. I think it's like 500%. So if you were to just go out and do a set of, I think it's like 6 to 8 sprints where it's kind of a max exertion of 10 seconds or longer, which is actually really hard to maintain. So it might not be 100% of your effort, but a good 15 plus seconds of exertion, like all out intensity, and then rest. And to your point, 3 minutes is, it's kind of like on the low end too. You might need 4 or 5 minutes of rest. Repeat that 5 to 6 bouts. There's a huge spike in like just HGH alone. In terms of the effect it would have on testosterone, I don't know that mechanism of action specifically, but yeah, if you're just looking for that, sprints alone is huge for just improving HGH response.
And the reason, and I shared this with you, last time we met, and for people listening, it's, really important. I recently got my blood work done, and I also submitted my stool sample. And so what I found in my blood work, and it's so important. So for people listening, I know Phil will agree with this, get your blood work done so you know what your markers are, so you can evaluate, you know, what's insufficient and what's sufficient for, you know, the mechanisms that keep us alive and help us thrive. And so for me, my blood work came back and my potassium and sodium and iron levels were off and my testosterone levels were low. And so, simultaneously, I got my stool sample results back and my gut health was out of balance. And so the doctor, I have a holistic doctor here locally, he put me on a bunch of supplements, probiotics to restore my gut health, to keep it more in balance. And I'm gonna get my blood work done again here soon to see the effects of the gut health on my blood work. But I was alarmed because I wasn't sure why the blood work results came back the way that they did. And then I got my stool sample results and the doctor pointed to the gut health bacteria being out of balance as the determining factor of everything else being off.
Right. Yeah. The gut obviously plays a huge role. I think you can tie a lot of disease, a lot of dysfunction right back to the gut. That's one thing I think more science outside of the mainstream medical system is really identified. So for sure, focusing on gut health will improve a lot of things, or at least it'll be like the pathway for a lot of other things to start improving once you can improve your gut health.
Yeah. And so the lesson here for people listening is make sure you're getting your blood work done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And your stool sample analysis. I mean, that's even more important in my opinion, because of what Phil just said, 70% of our immune system is tied up in the gut. And so if we have a gut health, if our gut health is out of balance, it's going to wreck every other part of our life or negatively impact every other part of our life. And so the stool sample analysis and technology makes it so easy now. And so for people listening, highly recommend stool sample analysis and getting your blood work done.
Yeah. And actually that there's a really good point in there too, that should be mentioned, is that if you're doing anything to improve your health, if you don't have a starting point, like starting data to look at, you don't actually know if you're improving anything, right? So blood work is a great place to start if you want to endeavor on any health journey. Like blood work is just kind of this baseline. We know what good metrics are. Although if you kind of have standard blood markers, we also know that standard or average is a little bit below. You can feel a lot better if you go above average, but your doctor's going to be okay if you're average. So you have to do a little digging on your own, maybe find a functional medicine doctor, holistic doctor that can point you into like, hey, here's how you get optimal levels, because we're not okay with average.
So absolutely, man. Thank you for sharing. Yeah, great point. The average, the starting points or the average of what the doctor's going to tell you, we're meant to thrive, not just be mediocre and be average. And so great point. And thank you for reinforcing that for people listening. We're going to get to lighting. I know lighting is important, but we got to go to the cold water, the ice baths. Like everybody's doing it, you know, and if it doesn't count if you're not posting on Instagram. So
that's the truth.
Hey, I'm guilty. If anybody's guilty, it's me. All right. So let's break it down for people listening. Ice baths, cold water immersion. Why should people do it? What are the health benefits? And just as important, can we do it? Can we overdo it?
Yeah. Great topic. It's kind of like the new fad, right? Like it's, especially if you're on social media, you're starting to see everybody trying to get into it, trying to do cold exposure in some way. And it can be a cold shower. It could be hopping in a river. It could be like a legit ice bath, a professional one, or you just fill the tub with water and you put ice in it. There's a host of benefits, right? Like I think it's hard to kind of highlight them all. What I like to say though, is I think one of the best things about it is it's a mental benefit in so many ways. One of the biggest ones is being the fact that you did something challenging, because most of the time we don't like to do the things that make us uncomfortable. And cold is one of the biggest ones. Coming from Southern California, grew up there most of my life. Half the people, or probably 90% of the people I talk to, and I try to encourage or tell them like, you should at least try it. They're like, you're never going to get me in cold water. Never, ever, ever, ever. And it's just this really hard line resistance. And all I see there is like a big wall that if you can break that down and you can step through that, man, so many things get easy, because you've convinced yourself, you've proved to yourself that you can do something challenging. And so for me, that's actually why I like to do it in the mornings, because it's really that like the mental barrier's there. There's always resistance. Like I don't want to get in all the time. And sometimes it all has to be is like just to get in for 1 minute, and to get out and then be like, oh gosh, you know, smile about it. Like I just did something hard. I succeeded. I just did something I didn't want to do. Now the rest of the day is cake. Like it just becomes so much easier because you've knocked out something that you were really resistant to. And whether it's like work, relationships, anything that comes up that's a little challenging, I feel like we just have that little bit of more mental resiliency to deal with it now. Because for that minute, that 2 minute, 3 minute that you're in that cold tub, you're kind of freaking out. Like, I mean, some of us can put that stoic face on, but the body is still in this fight or flight space, right? It's like all the physiology changes that are happening, like you're trying to survive. So there's a lot going on, and it's just so much more powerful than like the increase in dopamine, norepinephrine that you kind of see touted and thrown around, like, you know, these Instagram posts of like, I raised my, you know, norepinephrine and dopamine by 500% just by getting this cold plunge. Like that is great for sure. Like you're going to be on a high. It's better than caffeine for like 4 to 5, 6 hours. Independent on who you are, that can even ride out even longer, right? I think mm-hmm. Andrew Huberman, his podcast, like he's done a great job of bringing a ton of awareness, and he just spits the science, like exactly what we know today. And I think everybody's just riding that, but just know it's like, it's still subjective. Like whatever you're getting out of it, it could last way longer than what he says, you know, or what anybody mm-hmm. else says. So get in there just for the mental benefits alone. Like, it can help with depression, anxiety, anybody that's got an addiction to anything like that. Oh my gosh, like cancer, like hard to talk about that topic, right? But the studies are there. Like, I can't remember which journal is putting it out now, but on some of the animal tests that they're doing, they're literally getting rid of cancer cells in these animals. So it's like, you know, the mechanism of action is very similar to humans, which is why it's showing a lot of potential. And you've got anecdotal evidence from people out there today. They're on social media. Like, I started river swimming and cured myself of cancer. And there's a lot of things happening there. If you're getting in the river, you're also grounding, you're getting into nature. You're getting Earth's frequency back into you, which is like resetting your cells at a cellular level. So there's so many benefits to just cold exposure. It's kind of hard to like talk about them all, but it's just, it's easy and it's not, you know, anybody that's plunged, you know, it's not easy.
All right. I got to make sure, in our Biohacking Bend, WhatsApp group, this question comes from Dan, Dan S. How cold does a cold plunge need to be? What are the additional benefits of water colder than 55 degrees? Are there diminishing returns below a certain temp?
Great questions, Dan. So at least from the research, and again, I can't point to the specific studies, but they're showing most of the research is like at 55 degrees or below, and it might be 54. But once you're below that threshold, the studies are, they're putting people in that water for like up to an hour in some cases to get some of the benefits from it. Now, 55 degrees in terms of a cold plunge is actually kind of warm. If you're new to cold plunging, that's still pretty cold, right? You're going to freak out getting into that water. But what happens, and so I would say like that is that threshold. Like if you're in 55 degree or colder water, you're going to get benefit. And if you're really not cold adapted at all, this is where like we're bio-individual on like a whole nother level. If you just get in water that is uncomfortable, it's probably going to do some good. You just have to expose yourself to it every so often. But in terms of like, now let's bring that temperature down. Like what's an unsafe level? I think anything that puts you at risk for thermal, what's the word I'm looking for? Hypothermia. Yeah. So if you get into hypothermia, obviously that's too cold, right? So there is a dose and an amount of time that's going to be unique to you. So it's really trying to understand that. And that's why I like coaching people through the cold is like, you can tell them what they should be feeling and let them know what's comfortable, what's okay, and what's not, because people do start to freak out. If you jump into a 40 degree ice bath or 37, you're probably going to want to jump out right away. And maybe you're in there that first minute and that you've got this pinging, tingling sensation. And you're like, I want to get out. Like this kind of hurts. You're going to be okay. You're going to be okay for a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. You know, we know that the body is more than capable of handling that. I would say there's probably not natural water you could get into that's too cold. It's just too long. Like how long is too long really? So you've got to know how cold adapted you are. I mean, there's cold water swimmers that do ocean swims, like vast distances, some cases wetsuits, some cases not. And they're in there for hours, but they're so adapted that they're fine. They're just swimming. You got to learn the body, play around with temps. I like to expose people in short bouts, get them used to it. And then tell them if they want to go longer, you know, you do it on your own. I'm not like, I don't care to push people like super far on that threshold because one, if you do have a problem and you've got to respond to it, it puts you in a whole nother liability situation. And, you know, I don't want to mess with that too much, but doing it safely, find your limit, know your threshold, try to push it every so often. But then to your other point, also take it away, right? If we do something every single day, there is a bell curve to everything, right? It goes up and then it comes back down. So Susanna Soberg, she's great. She's been on Andrew Huberman's podcast. She's done a lot of the pioneering around research around cold. What she's talking about, and it's well known, but people got to be careful, is if you cold plunge every single day and extend that time, you're actually stressing out the cells of your body. You are literally causing them to stress out and you're going to reduce the lifespan of your healthy cells. So you've got to be careful that you're not overstressing the cells of your body. So it's just knowing what's too long. And then it's okay if you miss a day, come back, you know, take a week off and then come back. Maybe you can only do a minute again. What's wrong with that? You know, if you're having to spend a lot longer in the water, One, that's a time commitment. And from a biohacking standpoint, it's all about minimal effective dose. At least that's how it is for me. And that's what I try to show people is like 2 to 3 minutes is that therapeutic range at a temperature below 55 degrees. So if I can get you there, you get the benefits, you get out, go on with your day. Like you can do a bunch of other biohacks now. Otherwise you're spending, an hour in the tub and you've lost, let's say 50 minutes of productivity.
All right. So let me make sure I get this right. So the analogy I use with what I heard you just say, Phil, is which I did used to take drugs because I was addicted to drugs and alcohol. And when I was using drugs, I would need to use more of the same drug to elicit the same amount of a dopamine spike. So is that the same thing as what you're saying? If I'm sitting in cold water every day, I'm going to need to sit in it longer and colder to elicit the same amount of dopamine spike, just like in drug use.
Exactly the same. Yeah. And I think it's the same thing if you want to talk about sauna use, any other kind of biohacks. There's just that curve to it and that adaptation that we have as humans where you can get really good at sitting in a 3 minute cold tub. And so now you want to push it to 10 minutes or you see Joe Rogan that does 20 minutes in Roscoe Forge, which is also kind of crazy. I don't recommend anybody go do that, but he was testing himself, right? So mm-hmm. if you start to do it every single day, you will build adaptation and you'll find out that you're comfortable now in 5 minutes. Now you're comfortable in 10 minutes and you have to keep pushing that threshold. And Andrew Huberman has a great podcast on this around dopamine too, and how you have these like troughs of dopamine where you can get a nice big high, but then the drop off can be really, really steep. And I think that is part of the effect of doing something every day all the time is you start to wear that out. You need more and more and more. And then that drop off becomes really steep. So to your point, like with drug use, people have to go back to more and more and more because now they're in such a deficit. They've got to overdo it to get back to that same level. And it's the same with cold exposure. It's the same mechanisms of action. It's just, a different environment.
Moderation for people listening. Don't overdo it.
Right.
Yep. All right. Last thing, lighting. Why is lighting so important?
Well, I mean, biologically, if you just look at how we're designed is with sunrise, it's sunrise alone is actually how we initiate good sleep. And it's all because that full spectrum light from the sun directly into our eyes with no filtration of sunglasses, not through a window, windows filtering it too. You've got to get directly in the eyes. It's information to the body. Like the eyes are the only part of the brain that's exposed externally. So that sunlight is literally information. It's going to cue hormones. A bunch of different mechanisms are going to kick off literally just by seeing that sunrise in the morning. And what's happening is as a society, we are not exposed to sun anymore. Like the first time we step out of the day, it might be noon in some cases. And then when we do, I think most people are stepping out into the sun with sunglasses on. And man, this was hard for me. I'll tell you that. I kicked sunglasses to the curb probably 3 years ago or longer. And it's still a tough transition. Sometimes when I go from indoors to out, I'll be squinting for like 20 minutes. Now I have lighter color eyes too, which doesn't help, but it's really one of those things that for my entire life, I wore sunglasses and that's really tricking your body. You are doing a disservice just by wearing sunglasses because your body is now thinking you are not in the sun. And so a lot of things aren't happening. You're not going to get the same melanin production. You're not going to synthesize the UVB in the sun to actually generate vitamin D. You've just got to get that full spectrum sunlight directly in the eyes. Now that doesn't mean stare directly at the sun, but just being outside, like that light's coming in from different angles. And that's what's so awesome about the eyes is it does all the filtering for you.
All right. One thing that you taught me when we, last time we were together, living here in Bend during the winter months, we're talking about vitamin D deficiency. Yep. So let's talk about that real quick. Because I always thought vitamin D was something we get from the sun, but that's incorrect, right?
Yeah, so.
And I want to make sure. So I want you to explain also living in Bend in the winter months, talk about the vitamin D winter months. And it was the,
it's like the 37th parallel.
Yeah. Explain to people listening, explain that concept, please.
So what it really means is there's like above the 37th parallel, wherever you live, doesn't matter where it is. If you're above the 37th parallel, there is a certain time of the year where the sun doesn't get high enough in the sky to have direct penetration with certain UV rays to hit the body and actually start generating or the having vitamin D synthesis in the body, because vitamin D isn't radiating off the sun. It's just not how it works. We synthesize vitamin D, and it's because the UVB, the other UV rays, all work in conjunction to basically start that process in the body. But it's that 37th parallel, which is actually slightly above like LA in California, that if you're above there, yeah, here in Bend, Oregon, when we moved up here, I looked at the app that I use, which is the D-Minder app. It lets you know what times of the day you can get your optimum level of vitamin D from the sun, which is still like a funny way to say it because you're not getting vitamin D, but you know, is what I just explained. When you're above that parallel, there's going to be months of the year, and especially up here, many months of the year where the sun just isn't high enough in the sky. So you can get out in the sun, but you are not going to be getting the vitamin D that you need. So you've got to get it from nutrition. Like obviously eggs is a big one you can get your vitamin D from. There's other foods you can get vitamin D from, but supplementing is huge, and not just any supplement, but like a good liposomal, easily absorbable form. There's a couple brands out there. I love Quiksilver Scientific, because you also need to look for a combination of vitamin D with, it's like vitamin K, but they're MK2 and MK7 forms. That's actually what helps pull the vitamin D into the bones and get absorption. Otherwise, it might just circulate and kind of you're not just getting the absorption you'd like. So it gets a little technical there, but just know there's better forms of vitamin D than others. If you want it in a liposomal form, that just means it's easy to absorb. And certain times of the year, download the D-Minder app. It's going to let you know, like your next opportunity to get vitamin D from the sun, and step out there when it is. In the wintertime, it's really hard in a lot of places.
All right. What's the name of the app?
D-Minder.
M-I-N-D-E-R?
Yes.
Okay. I'll put that in the show notes. Man, for people listening, I'm going to tell you, go back and re-listen to this. Take notes. Like these are the things that are going to help us live longer, healthier, more fulfilling lives. And it's not just one thing I'm hearing Phil say, it's all these little things that we can do, in different areas of our life to truly thrive and not just survive. And it's really important for people listening. We were not meant to be mediocre. We were meant to thrive in every area of our life. That's, you know, our physical health, our mental health, our emotional health, our relationships with our friends and our family and our community, work that brings us fulfillment, travel, play, and adventure, which leads me and fun to my last question, most important question. Phil, what the hell do you do for fun?
Oh man, fitness is a big part of my health and life journey. Whether I'm educating people in fitness or I'm just doing it for myself, I think having fitness in your life allows you to have more fun because you get to explore more. So it's like, for me, being able to work out in the gym and express myself to my fullest means that outside the gym, I actually get to play and explore a little bit more. For us, that's hikes. We love hiking, challenging hikes too, like, you know, climbing Mount Whitney, maybe getting into some mountaineering soon. We never really explored that too much. But the challenging day hikes, like down in Southern California, you got Clouds. Is it Clouds Rest or Cactus to Clouds?
It's Cactus to Clouds.
Yeah, from the Palm Spring Desert all the way to the top of Mount San Jacinto. It's one of the most challenging day hikes in the world. We've done that once, and maybe I'll do it again, but extremely challenging. You're gaining like 11,000 feet of gain in just one day. And if you want to come back down that, that's, if anybody's done a big hike, the way up is half the battle. It hurts coming back down. So, yeah, having fun, just using my body to its fullest, but it's because I'm doing all the little things that allow me to perform just a little bit better. So that's fun in a nutshell, I guess, just exploring and expressing through movement what my body is capable of doing.
All right. Two more things. Yeah. This podcast is called Positive Impact. What comes to mind when you hear positive impact for you?
I think that is, I mean, it can be summed up to individuals or groups of people who are doing things that have a positive impact. Now that sounds pretty cheesy, but it can be very deep too, right? Like it doesn't have to be in a biohacking sphere. It can be in a religious sphere. It could be in mental, just sanity, like just helping people with their mental capabilities. I don't know. It's having a positive impact just means that individuals or groups coming together, trying to do better, right? Just bring enlightenment, bring more joy, bring more happiness. Like, you know, we live in a society that's really full of negative, negative images, negative news. And so I think bringing that positivity in is what everybody needs. So like when I hear that, that's kind of what resonates. It's like bringing the light back in, just bring that energy back.
I love it, man. Yeah. Well, the reason you're on this podcast is because you, my friend, are having a positive impact in this community and in communities all over. And I want to acknowledge you again for all that you're doing. You're supporting, empowering, uplifting, being of service to a lot of people. And I want to acknowledge you, man, and acknowledge the positive impact you're having.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that.
All right. So where can people find you to follow you if they want more of you, if they want to geek out on all things biohacking, if they want, you know, where do we go to find you?
Well, probably the easiest place right now is Biohacking Bend on Instagram. That's the name of just the Instagram account that I created where I just host people in my house. We just do breath work. We do cold plunging. We've had events on just talking about health related topics, and there's going to be a lot more of that coming. My personal Instagram, it's a funny name. If you've been in CrossFit for a long time, you'll completely understand it. And that's why I named it the what it is. It's Filthy 50. That's my Instagram name. That is after the Filthy 50 workout, which is like 50 repetitions of like 10 different movements. It's a terribly hard workout. And when I first found CrossFit, I was like, that's it. That's my Instagram name.
All right. We'll put all that in the show notes. There's going to be a lot of information in the show notes. And everybody for listening, thank you. Thanks for being here, Phil. Appreciate you. And let's all go out today. Let's go out today and thrive. Let's go out and have a positive impact on somebody else. Spread the love, acts of kindness, because we're all in this together. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And we will see you again next week.
Thank you.
See ya.
Grateful. Thank you.